We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. In this hour of Focus, we'll be talking about the Illinois economy, the state of the Illinois budget, and some of the challenges faced by lawmakers in Springfield these days as they try to deal with the Illinois economy where it is right now. And certainly, it is true that Illinois is one of the most economically troubled states in the country. In fact, there are some people would say that while maybe the state of California is well known for having the worst budget problems, Illinois might indeed be right behind. It's been estimated that revenue shortfalls, if you put together ones that'll be left over from this fiscal year, put those together with the next fiscal year, they could top $11 billion. The state's bond rating is the second lowest in the nation. Unemployment rose to double digits last year. So this morning, we'll try to talk a little bit about the financial condition of the state, talk about the connections between the Illinois economy and the national economy. And we have two guests here in studio. Joining me is Fred Gertz. He's on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois and also has been a professor in the Department of Economics here in Urbana-Champaign since 1980. And then joining us by telephone also this morning, joining us by telephone from Chicago, we have one of his colleagues here also from the Institute. We're talking with Richard Dye. He's been on the faculty of IGPA since 1990 and does research in areas of state and local government finance as it relates to economic development. And the two of them have both contributed to the Illinois Report for 2010. This is something now that has been coming out for a number of years. It's published by the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. And this time around has sections looking at the Illinois economy, the national economy, also other kinds of issues having to do with health care in Illinois, waste and recycling, higher education. You can get a copy from IGPA. You can read it online. So any way you want to do it, this is just the latest edition and has some good things in there to look at and think about as we try to talk about where we're going here in the state of Illinois. And, of course, as always, questions here on the program are welcome, and the guests will do their best to respond. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We have a toll-free line, good anywhere around the state you could hear us. If you're up in Chicago, you could use that. Any place where you can hear us, you can use that, 800-222-9455. And we do also have email, so you can send in your question that way, and that's will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, here in the studio with us, Professor Gertz, thank you.
Thank you.
For being here once again, as always, a pleasure to have you with us. And Professor Dye.
Good morning.
Thanks very much to you both for being here. Well, I don't know where the best place to start is. Maybe I could ask both of you. Maybe I'll start with Professor Dye, and then Fred can also make his comment. Just cite some basic indicators, some important numbers that will tell us something about the Illinois economy, where we stand right now.
The national economy went over double-digit unemployment, but Illinois is higher. The national economy went just over 10%, Illinois over 11%. So we've suffered more from this recession than other states. And you might want to keep this part separate, but the fiscal hit we've taken from this is on top of neglecting our budget situation in the good years, so the recession hit our budget much harder than it hit many other states.
Mm-hmm. And what, just because we do want to connect this to the budget, and I think crisis is certainly an appropriate word to use about where we are right now. And I hope I mentioned these numbers very quickly, and I want to make sure that that I'm accurate. So, do you think that those, when we talk about the shortfalls in the budget, that by the time we get through the rest of this fiscal year and we get into the next fiscal year, we're really talking about more than $11 billion?
Actually, make it 12.8.
Better and better, 12.8.
Number, yeah. Carrying forward about $5.7 billion, and then whatever the difference is between 12.8, so what, 7.1 of revenue that we had last year or obligations that we'll have next year that are different from 2010.
Hmm. You want to add on to that?
Well, I think that we might contrast things with a year ago. I think that Dick and I were here talking about similar issues a year ago. Some things have remained the same. Some things have changed. There actually is a small bit of good news. The fact is that the financial panic that was gripping the country from the fall of 2008 into 2009, I think, is pretty much past now, which is really good news. Again, we were talking last year about a stock market that was really down to depths that probably no one predicted, and there was still all kinds of uncertainty in the financial area. That is starting to clear up now, and I think is pretty much on the right track. That doesn't say much, though, about the recession. The recession problems were greater than anyone expected, and we're still suffering the lingering effects of that. Larry Summers, who's the economic advisor to President Obama, said that we're in a technical recovery. Gross domestic product is growing 6%, things of that sort, but still in kind of a human recession because unemployment rates still are very high. And unfortunately, the expectation is that the unemployment rates are going to continue high for some time. So instead of going back to maybe 6 or 7%, now the expectation is it probably will remain above 9% for the rest of this year.
Hmm. And something that I'm sure that we have talked about before, because you, for a long time now, you've been tracking the Illinois economy, and,
right.
and you report every month,
right.
That one of the things that we know is even after things improve on the national level, the Illinois economy has this tendency to lag behind. So that even once things start looking better,
right.
we're still going to have serious challenge.
Right. It doesn't seem like a good thing now, but we're relatively slow going into the recession. But again, as you said, we're slow coming out. And overlaid on top of the whole process is the fact that even though Illinois is a rich and prosperous state, it's a slow-growing state. So we're not going to expect huge growth even when the recovery begins. But again, mm-hmm. at some point, it's going to kick in. It's, in a sense, a double-edged sword, because one of the reasons why unemployment rate so high is in the long term actually a good reason. That is, we've had productivity growth. Even during the recession, productivity increased, and in the long term, productivity is what makes the economy tick and what's going to help us. But in the short run, it means that businesses don't need to hire as many people to produce the same amount of output. So even though demand is picking up again, they're not calling back workers yet. There's going to be some time before that happens.
Mm. That's always true, Daniel, nationally and locally, that production turns up before employment does.
Hmm. And just maybe one other point, and it's one of the points you make right off here in your section of the Illinois Report, Professor Dye, is that the kind of problems that we're talking about here in the state of Illinois is not alone. I mean, other states have a lot of the same issues, although maybe as I said at the beginning, that we're in worse shape than a lot of other places. We're not the only state that has these kind of problems.
Yeah, there was a report by the Pew Center on the States that came out just several months ago that what went wrong with California, they identified 9 other states that are also in very bad fiscal condition. And on some of the measures, Illinois ranks the worst, but we're certainly up there with or down there with the states with the most difficulty in terms of the housing crisis, but in particular the fiscal crisis and they explicitly single out Illinois for having bad fiscal management.
I thought they were actually generous. I said it was a case of great inflation because we were only rated the eighth worst state in the country, and I think we're actually, unfortunately, worse than that because I don't think they took into account some of the other issues. I've tried to kind of decompose this into different parts, and if you look at the state's problems, one problem which Professor Dye has been working on for some time now and has a lot of information about is a structural deficit. In the long term, we just don't have revenues that keep pace with our expenditures, and that's part of the problem. And overlaid on top of that is the cyclical problem, the downturn that made things a whole lot worse. But then Illinois has another kind of problem, which I think is a lack of discipline. We have a discipline deficit as well, that we simply have not stepped up to face the challenges, the fiscal challenges that we need to do. And this is not anything new. Most places actually did better during the rebound after the 2001 recession. So, over the period 2003 to 2007, most other states actually improved their situation and actually made themselves better able to meet the new challenges. Illinois, unfortunately, temporized during that period of time, and we were coming out of an expansion period, not just running on empty, but running below empty, and then facing an even worse situation in the future. So in addition to all these other problems, we had the, as has been mentioned, this lack of discipline for quite some time in the state.
Well, this is, and here, I guess I turn to Professor Dye, and you can talk some more about this. And I think this is a very important point, as Professor Gert says, that we have a couple of different kinds of problems. We have this problem that's related to what's happening in the national economy. So everybody's facing that kind of problems. And so part of this is cyclical. Yeah, things go up and things go down. But that we also have what is a much more serious kind of problem, as Professor Gertz points out, that we probably would be having that problem whether the downturn in the economy had come or not. And that is this really serious mismatch between our revenue and our spending. And in fact, in this report, you all have made some projections and graphed this out looking into the future. And the picture is not encouraging. You find if you look out over the next couple of decades, you look at what we would expect with revenue and what we're expecting to be spending, is that it looks like our revenue we're expecting maybe that'll grow maybe about 4.5% a year, and you're expecting the expending to grow maybe about, well, maybe not quite 5.5% a year, but more than the revenue.
Yeah, there's. But by looking at how revenues had grown relative to income or other determinants in past years, we project growth rates out in the future. You know, what if this relationship stayed the same? So we're sort of trend projecting. And the bottom line is that revenues grow about 1% per year less than spending would be projected to grow. And that might not sound like much, but it compounds every year, and so you can get a 20% gap or more than a 20% gap after 20 years. So every year we fall farther and farther behind. And so that's compounding, using the word compounding in one sense. The compounding factor and Fred already touched on this, is that in the past we've made a whole lot of choices that have pushed the problem out to the future, and now we're in that future. When revenues have turned up cyclically, we've ratcheted up spending on sort of a current basis. We've moved revenues from the future into now and obligated them, obligated future revenues or borrowed against future revenues. We've pushed spending out into the next budget year. And the most important source of this, making short-run choices that made the long-run worse, was not to fund the projected pension obligation on a current basis. It's a disguised form of borrowing that has been used in the state, and if you adjust for that, our deficits have been very large in every one of the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Even though we might meet the letter of the balanced budget requirement in the Constitution, although I don't think we did this year, we are not really balancing the budget, because we're only doing so by pushing off pension costs till later when they become due and payable.
Yeah, this is something that actually we're planning on. We're going to do an entire show looking at the pension problem here in the state of Illinois. And Fred's going to be back here again in a week. So, of course, anybody who wants to talk about that, we can. But I just want to make sure that people know that we wanted to concentrate on that for as a particular main focus for a whole hour of the show, and we'll be doing that because a recent report, and again, I believe this was a report from the Pew Center,
right,
just came out and said that as far as underfunding your pensions go, we are actually now the worst.
Dead last. Yeah.
Dead last. Right. We used to be able to say California was worse, but no, we're the worst. And I don't know if there's anything you wanted to say about that right now.
Well, I think that what I would say is that pensions are clearly a problem and they have to be addressed. But as Dick said, they're not the main cause of our problem. The main problem we have now is we overspend in the past. We use pensions to fund that. And I'd also suggest that pensions are not the sole place we want to look for to correct the problem. So pensions are very important. They illustrate the hurdle we have to clear, but that doesn't necessarily mean that pensions have to be singled out as a sole source of reductions. If we're going to face this, I think the recent movie was there will be blood. Well, in this case, there will be pain, and the pain has to be widely distributed. Part of that may go to the pensions, but part of it has to go to almost every aspect of state government activity. So it's not going to be an easy thing. Several years ago, people talked about a tax increase, and the tax increase was to do some good new things, a tax increase to cut property taxes at the local level, a tax increase to fund schools better, things of that sort. Nowadays, when we talk about a tax increase, we're talking about a tax increase that would be accompanied not by spending increases, but by spending cuts. So it's a very, very difficult kind of fiscal challenge we face, but one that we have to actually have to address over the next year or so.
Mm. Let me just very quickly reintroduce our guests. Here in studio with me is Fred Gertz. He's professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Illinois here at Urbana-Champaign. He's also affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And then joining us by telephone from Chicago, Richard Dye. He's also part of IGPA, has been on faculty since 1990, has done a lot of research and writing on state and local government finance. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, both of them contributors to the Illinois Report for 2010, published by the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and contains articles on a number of subjects having to do with the Illinois economy, other things as well. You can read it online if you go to the website of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, or I'm sure that you can also get a hard copy from them if you want to read it. Any way you want to read it, it's available. And here we're certainly open to questions and comments, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. We were starting to get some callers here, and I'll get them in. Maybe one other question, and I'll just start here with Fred Gertz, and then Professor Dye, you can add on. It seems that the financial crisis that we've been dealing with now for a while, it seemed to take a lot of people by surprise. That is, it just suddenly, a big weight that dropped out of the sky. Can you, though, should we and should have the people in Springfield known, kind of gotten a sense that this was coming? I mean, is it fair for them to say that it was a surprise?
Well, we want to make the distinction between the big financial crisis, which is the U.S. financial crisis that occurred in September 2008, and that obviously did take us by surprise.
Yeah.
and something that hasn't happened for probably since the Great Depression. So it's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully a once-in-a-lifetime kind of occurrence. The state financial crisis, talking about the state budget, is not the slightest bit of a surprise. We've been talking about this for years. The only surprise that I find is that the state's been able to manage so long. I thought beginning in 2003 that Governor Blagojevich could only pursue this kind of temporizing policy for 2 or 3 years before the state would be in deep trouble, and he actually extended it to 6 years. So you have to give him credit for ingenuity, but unfortunately, that ingenuity has resulted in the kind of even worse situation we face today.
No, it's certainly no surprise to anybody who has been interested in state budget issues But it was below the radar of many people in the House and Senate, and certainly the public and press.
Well, I think you're being too charitable to the House and Senate. I think they, if they didn't know, it was obviously gross neglect on their part. So there's no doubt that the people in power knew, and they were hoping that use Dick's analogy, they could kick the can down the road for another year or two and things would change, and they obviously haven't changed. So I don't think anyone in government has the excuse that they didn't know. Yeah. They may have ignored it, but not knowing really isn't very likely.
Well, you wonder what it is that they thought was going to change. Would they somehow think that there was going to be a dramatic upturn in the economy, and that would mean that suddenly a revenue stream would go up?
Well, obviously, it's worse because of the recession. So things were bad to begin with, and they got even worse. So I don't think they probably didn't expect the situation they were in to be aggravated by the severe downturn we had. But again, I think there's a kind of calculus on the part of politicians that even though they know the long term, that they live in the short term. And raising taxes this year before the next election is a more serious problem for them than having the state have a financial crisis 5 or 10 years down the road. And as Dick pointed out, that it used to be 5 or 10 years down the road. Now the 5 or 10 years has arrived. So maybe that calculus will change since they're not talking about some ill-defined problem that's going to occur after they leave office. Now you're talking about a problem that's going to occur if they have any length at all of service, is going to occur in the next year or two.
Mm. So three things there. First, to second what Fred just said, the political time horizon is very short, the next election, and they're often willing to trade off problems in the long term to get some benefits in the short term, like funding a new program or something like that, or avoiding raising taxes or cutting spending. Second, there is some very real sense in which we get the government we deserve, in that we ask this sort of denial of our politicians. We ask for more programs that we like, or that benefit people like us, and we ask for tax cut at the same time, as if there were no contradiction in that. And I just dropped my third point, and I'll jump back in with it.
Okay. Well, I have some callers, so let's bring them in. We'll start with someone in Belgium, and this will be on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all. And you just started on to the question I have. It's not only that they weren't completely aware of the fact that there were need for tax increases, but they refused to talk about them just for the plain and simple reason that they want to keep their cushy jobs down in Springfield. And we all know it, that we as a populace refuse to vote for anybody that says anything about increasing taxes. I mean, that's every time we hear an election, that's the first thing they talk about. No new taxes, no taxes, no this. And the logic of that is beyond belief. I mean, we have to pay for what we get. And I'm not talking about special things or nice things. You need roads. You need education. You need health. You need the basic aspects that any government in the world deals with. But we have this government that we can't seem to get by. But the point I wanted to point out also is, even though we say no new taxes, there's lots of places to tax more that people are willing to pay for. And I'm talking about one that California seems to be able to start voting for this fall, which is they're going to start taxing one of the sins that a lot of people in our state involved with. And why send this money to Mexico or to South America or Europe or wherever these cartels are that deal in these drugs? Let's do them here at home. Let's pay ourselves. Let's get a little intelligent about it and then solve our problems at home too. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, I don't know how many people would embrace a solution like that, but let me ask you this question.
Let me say one thing.
Yes.
But I think that the caller is right in sort of half the equation, but spending discipline is the other half of the equation. Not only do people not want to pay more taxes, they also want to maintain their programs and actually expand their programs. So Governor Blagojevich was not just a delinquent in terms of not addressing the tax issue. He also figured out ways to spend more money. And so the two things together with the promise of no burden on anyone really, I think, is an indictment both on the government and also on the citizens for not recognizing the fact that you can't have something for nothing.
Yeah. Well, there here, Professor Gritz just spoke right to the very point that I was going to raise, and that is, it seems that as people are discussing the state's budget situation, that sometimes it seems as if we're being presented with a choice that says, well, either we can raise taxes or you can cut spending. That is, you can have one, you can have the other. And it sounds what Fred was saying, and I would expect you would agree, is that both of those things are going to happen. That is, spending is going to have to get reined in. But on the other hand, there's got to be more money. We've got to find some way to bring more money in.
There's three things actually you can do. You can cut spending, or you can raise taxes, or you can push things off to the future and make obligations in the future or revenues in the future lower, which is what we've done in the past. There's absolutely no question in my mind that the magnitude of the crisis that we're currently in, which comes a lot from pushing things forward to this year from the past decades, the magnitude of the problem we face this year cannot be addressed with anything but massive spending cuts and significant tax increases.
And there's also – there's no silver bullet. The caller probably alluded to taxing – making marijuana legal and taxing it. And regardless of how you feel about that, the problem is that wouldn't raise a whole lot of money to deal with our problems. And to illustrate this and illustrate the triviality of the situation, what was a tax associated with the Obama trillion-dollar spending increase for health care? It was taxing tanning salons. Well, how much money are you going to get from tanning salons to finance a trillion-dollar program? So again, we're not talking about taxing tanning salons or taxing only rich people or taxing legalized drugs or something of that sort. We have to talk about, in this case, some real money, which means some real pain for people in terms of their taxes.
Well, and how much what sort of a tax increase do you think that it would take, and how painful really are we talking about?
Well, it's sort of a conditional question. With spending discipline, I think that a 1 percentage point increase in taxes and some rearrangements with long-term discipline could deal with the problem. But I have very little faith that state of Illinois has that discipline. I'm sure not many callers or listeners listen to Dave Ramsey, who's a new guru about finances, and that people call in and say, what do you do? I'm $200,000 in debt. How do I deal with it? Well, there are two ways to deal with it. One way is to get out of debt again, which will allow you to go on another spending spree. The other way is to get out of debt and then get on the right path to live the rest of your life. And my fear is that the state of Illinois wants to get out of their problems so they can engage in another spending spree. So I don't really see the discipline there that's needed to accompany a tax increase. So I'm not very, very sanguine about solving our problems with a small tax increase, because I don't think we have the accompanying discipline to go with that.
Yeah. Hey, Professor Dye, you want to add anything?
No, I would second that. I mean, I would probably say that the magnitude of the tax increase would have to be somewhat greater than that. But the real point is the skepticism about whether there could be the spending discipline after the budget was balanced. And remember my projections that spending grows about or tends to grow about 1% faster than revenues. Even if we solve the problem in the short term, the lines would grow apart and be significantly apart after just several years. And the lines would grow apart because it's very hard politically to not. You know, there are real important needs out there. There are real, you know, there are people that need subsidies for their drugs. There are people that need elder daycare for their parents that they are caring for at home that they just can't work if they have to. You know, they're glaring needs that somebody can point to. They just got to be paid for, or we got to not provide all the services that can be identified as important to at least somebody.
All right, let's go back to callers. Next is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for doing this program. I think this is very valuable information. I would just like to disagree slightly and at the characterization of the first half hour. We did this, we did this, we did this. It's not we. The people who did this have names. They're legislators. It's Mike Frerichs, Naomi Jacobson, Dale Ryder, Chapin Rose. I have been on their case for 5 years. I'm not an economist. I'm a reasonably well-informed citizen. They won't talk to you about the budget shenanigans. They have abdicated their voice to the party leadership. The News Gazette has been covering the budget or the shortfall here in a local community. You know, close to $500 million of payroll has disappeared in our community. They're writing about it nearly every day, and you won't find one mention of our state legislators' names in any of these articles. You go to their websites, they have got nothing in there on their proposals or what they're working on the budget. The most recent times any of them been in the newspaper, in today's paper, Mike Frerichs is touting a bill that would require county clerks to put extended voting on campuses or something like that. I mean, they're diddling around, and the state is collapsing around them, and everybody needs to do what I'm doing. Every time I see them, I talk budget, budget, budget. But it's not the case that we get the government we deserve, because we have no means to get rid of these people. They're all in safe districts. They're there as long as they want to be there. They can't be dislodged. And we have to make it uncomfortable for them. And I urge you, David, to invite the four of them on, to be on for an hour. And they need to be grilled. What are they doing within their party to alter the power structure so that the legislators can actually go through the budget committee process, do the jobs they're elected? Because you know nothing is going to happen. It never does. They end the session with no budget action, and then sometime in the summer there's a meeting between the governor and the House and Senate leadership, and they do something, and then all the backbenchers approve it. And it's been going on for years, and you know, we really need to name these people and make it uncomfortable for them. They shouldn't be able to go around the community as though they're doing their jobs, because they're not. The beginning of government is budget. If you don't do your budget, nothing else matters.
Well, I appreciate the comment. Let's see. I want to get some reaction. And then I have a number of other callers. I want to get some reaction from our guests.
Well, in their defense, they would say that they're powerless, that they're, even though they're an elected representative, even though they're a senator or a House member from the local district, they would say, probably rightly so, that all the power is with the Speaker and the Senate President, and maybe to a certain extent the minority leaders. And that's the way Illinois works, and it works very poorly for that reason. So, but on the other hand, they could come forward, the local representatives could recommend a big income tax increase, all kind of cuts and so on. They could talk about it, go to meetings and so on, nothing would happen. They have to figure out a way to change the power structure and to diffuse some of the power in the General Assembly, and that really hasn't happened yet. It's going to take a kind of mini-rebellion to do that, and I'm not sure they're up to leading that rebellion.
I don't retreat from my earlier statement that the general public, the voting populace, not individuals who may be both informed and committed, but the general public has rewarded politicians for doing what they're doing.
Yeah, a case in point. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This leadership members split is very real in the state of Illinois. I testified before a committee last summer, I think, that was looking for ways to cut the budget, and I was really astonished by the ignorance of some, just the, you know, two or three, this is very anecdotal, legislatures, as to the larger budget. They really felt like they were just doing what they were told. They even used the "they" language. They pass it, and it was like, wait a minute, you're a legislator. But here we are.
Well, I don't want to let the representatives off free, but I think the taxpayers, the citizens, have a good share of the blame as well. The case in point is the reelection of Governor Blagojevich. There's absolutely no misunderstanding about what he was doing fiscally or ethically. He had no endorsements to speak of any newspapers in the state. Everyone was against him, and yet he walked through to reelection. So the voters, I think, are not immune from criticism here either.
Well, I really appreciate the thoughtful comment of the caller. I have some other people, and I want to get on to some others. And so we'll go next to Champaign County, line 2. Hello.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it short, though I'd like to fulminate as well. But and I feel the frustration of the last caller. But I would like for a more nuanced representation of what's all in the expression tax increase. I think one should start with the really skewed tax system that Illinois has, of how much burden goes on which quintile of income level, and that we should start with that and look at ways of correcting that. And with the Constitution we have, you can do what Quinn has suggested, which is to increase the personal deduction and raise the income tax and try to at least do a little progressivity in it. Earlier, the comment was made that in these jobless recoveries, as they're called, productivity gains are reflected. And it seems to me that one has to recoup that. Think of it I don't know if you want to use the term surplus value, but you have to look at where the productivity is. And it seems to me, I don't really advocate a European style value added tax, but it seems like that would be an easier way to go than changing the Constitution. And it would be a way of recouping, what you say is, productivity gains in the midst of this. I've always argued for a more fair corporate tax, and people always say that you can't do that because they'll just pass it on. Well, they should pass it on to their stockholders instead of the people that buy their products. And if we had a real competitive market, then it would be that would be possible to envision happening. Anyway, that's my contribution, because I just think that talking about tax increases without talking about reforming I don't know, maybe one of these gentlemen knows where people have scored state systems of revenue as far as how progressive they are, and Illinois does not stand up to its position in an industrial, where it should be in an industrial state, where all of these services are something that we should see as part of our living in a humane industrial culture. Thanks a lot. I'll just leave.
Well, I think that you have to look at two things. One is rate increases, and we talked about a possible increase in the rate of the income tax. The other possibility is broaden the base of the income tax and the sales tax, including the taxation of services and issues about base broadening with the income tax as well. The problem here, economists talk about a second best world where you can't necessarily do the things you might like to do. You have to do what's possible or what's available. And it doesn't make a lot of sense in Illinois to talk about changing into a highly progressive income tax system. First of all, it's not going to happen because of the Constitution. And secondly, even if it could happen, it's probably not necessarily a good idea, because what you'd like to do is not necessarily what you can do. Income is highly mobile, and attempting to have a high marginal tax rate for income at a local or a state level doesn't necessarily work. And most states that have done that have found it's not very successful. So I think we do have to look at the existing income tax and changing the rates and possibly expansion of the sales tax base.
And I'll turn to Professor Dye. I guess that, though, so to pick up on what the caller said, though, is there a way that you can make those changes and somehow ameliorate the effect on the people who are on the lower end of the income scale?
Well, as Fred said, I mean, the sort of the direct way to do it is to raise the rates and increase the personal exemption at the same time. That arithmetically, lowers the tax on low-income people and raises the tax on higher-income people, but not by a large proportion. There's some doubt, some great discussion about whether it would pass constitutional muster. But another way would be to have a vanishing credit, and not a progressive rate structure, but a subtraction from everybody's tax bill that got smaller and smaller the higher the income. That sounds like a progressive tax to me. I don't think it should pass constitutional muster, but some say that it would. Another way that some have proposed of getting more progressivity into the system is to change the tax base of the income tax entirely from income to the tax that you pay at the federal level. So to levy the state income tax as a proportion of the federal income tax, with all its progressivity of rate structures built in. I don't know whether that would pass constitutional muster, but there are other ways. but it's not easy. And as Fred says, there are certainly side effects and incentives as to where to live and so on.
All right. Let's go on to another caller, Morris, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. In the Illinois Department of Revenue tax booklet, the comptroller has a state budget report, and it shows in 2008 there was a $2 billion shortfall in the general fund revenue. So how far short are we on operating costs versus long-term costs such as pensions and things?
I think just in terms of the short-term costs, we're probably, Dick mentioned in the beginning, close to $6 billion, and that's being patched over in a variety of ways. So this is not – we're not talking now about the unfunded pension liability. That's a huge amount over and above this. These are our commitments we have in a particular year that we're simply not meeting, or meeting with sleight of hand kind of things like borrowing or rearranging revenues, things of that sort. So I think it's a substantial amount in the short run, not even including the bigger long-term kind of issues.
But without the $5.7 billion that's carried over from previous debts, how much are we falling short year to year?
Well, I think Dick may have addressed that in the beginning. I think it's another $6 or $7 billion. Right, because all the shortfall we have this year continues next year, plus in some cases we finance things this year by borrowing that we have to pay back in future years. So it's kind of a snowball that gets bigger and bigger.
But isn't a large portion of that $6 to $7 billion to pay off pension obligations?
No.
No.
It's to meet our annual cost of pensions that really is just barely meeting the increase in the pension cost, and has nothing to do with getting rid of the old obligations that are still there.
Okay, so it's the annual obligations to the pension fund.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next, Spring Bay, line 3. Hello.
Good morning, and I heard you were going to do a program on pensions in the future, but I just wanted to ask this. I was under the impression that state constitution from the 1970s, they wrote into the constitution that the legislature had to pay for the pensions as they went along. That they wrote it into the constitution because they didn't trust it to just the law, because they figured people would try to get around it. And so I guess my reaction would be, if that is the case, why aren't these legislators and the governor and the state officers being brought up on impeachment charges for not following the Constitution?
Well, the constitutional issue is not exactly the way you stated it. The Constitution, the provision in the Constitution is called the Non-Impairment Clause. The Non-Impairment Clause requires the state to pay benefits that are earned, or not reduce or not impair the benefits that are earned. So the state has an absolute constitutional obligation to pay earned benefits that are legitimately earned. The odd thing about it is that they're not required to actually fund those. So there's no constitutional requirement to fund pensions. It's just a constitutional requirement to pay the pensions when they're due. And if worse comes to worse, what would happen is the state would become a pay-as-you-go system, where they wouldn't have any prepaid kind of commitment for the pensions, but when they come due, they would pay them, which is similar to what we do with retiree health care benefits now.
Well, okay. Well, I'll keep listening. Good program, David.
All right. Let's go to line 1 for another call. This is Piatone. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, if they would just figure out a way to do the property tax cap and put a hold on taxes for the next couple of years, maybe we can promote jobs in this state. The problem I've seen, and I've worked with state legislators myself, with the local senator up where I'm from, it's just insane what they're charging people. I mean, I'm being forced out of my house just in property taxes, and it's because the price of one guy's house goes up, quite a bit. Nobody's working with nobody else. I just tell you this right now, just from my experience working with trying to get a property tax initiatives through with the one politician I did, it's insane. They don't talk to each other. I mean, when they don't talk to each other, then you're not going to get anything done. Am I not correct?
Well, you want to toss it? I'll toss it over to Richard Dyke. Can you make some response?
Well, I mean,
the property tax is certainly a source of frustration, but it's not part of the state's problem. In fact, property tax relief backed by the state or caps backed by the state could make the state's fiscal problem worse. As to the responsiveness of local elected officials to constituents, I don't know. I hear this person's experience, but I don't know how to generalize from that.
This also is this recent recession and recent state crisis is different from the previous one, because if you think back to 2001, the real estate market, the residential real estate market in particular, just went forward at pace during that period of time. So we had increasing property values, and to a large extent, maybe the caller is unhappy about this, the local governments made up their lack of state revenue by increasing local revenue through the property tax. But the world's different. The world is different now because the property tax base is no longer increasing similar to previous years.
Well, the only other thing is, too, is commercial work. You know, I heard this from Mayor Daley several times. One week he went out and he passed the sales tax, several different taxes. And then the next week following, he was complaining about all these companies leaving from McCormick Place and other shows, why he was leaving all the hardware shows and the other shows from McCormick Place is because, and I have talked directly with several people for this issue in the manufacturing industry, and what happens is they look at a head tax and they go, this is crazy. Why come to Chicago or Illinois when you can go somewhere else? And it's just squeezing the little guy. I'm a private business owner myself, and I got to tell you, I'm looking presently out of state. And as soon as I find something better, I'm gone, because the state of Illinois doesn't respect me or is a homeowner. So it's kind of, you know, when you're being squeezed with your lifeblood, it's like if you make money, you're guilty. And I'm just sticking up for other guys. I'll let you go. But just think this. Every time there's a tax out there, they go after the business owners before they go after the small guys. And that's what kills the state. Until they stop doing that, they'll never get manufacturing back in it. Thanks.
All right. I don't know. Fred, you want to comment? No. Okay.
You started off talking about tax caps, and a lot of the tax caps involve shifting. And most of the tax caps we've had experience with the state, at least in Cook County, involved shifting the tax burden from residential homeowners to commercial property. So you're squeezed, you know, to relieve you as a homeowner, you get more as a business owner. So it's not just relief, it's a shift.
Well, I'm going to real quick raise another question, and maybe there's not enough time to talk about this, but on the spending side, you know, given that there are a lot of important obligations here that it gets very difficult to short. There's the pensions. There's all the money that we spend in the state on health care. There's money we spend on education. There's so many other things. Where, and maybe Professor Dye, I don't know if you have an answer, and I'll see if Fred wants to talk about it too. Where do you see some of the best prospects for cutting, or do you think that there are some good prospects for cutting?
Well, the biggest places in the budget, the biggest amounts of spending in the budget, are on Medicaid. And aid to local school districts. Those are the two biggest items overall. So that's where you look. Eligibility for Medicaid was expanded substantially under the Blagojevich administration. Now, mind you, those are people that you could make a case as being very needy, but what can we afford? So it is possible to roll back there to the level of benefits of some earlier year. There will be pain. Similarly, school districts could get less, but you know, you will hear that puts more pressure on the property tax, and we just heard how that hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people in every school district that would say, why isn't the state helping us out? So those are the big bucks items. Pensions, you know, weight on the list, there's going to be pain.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the neat solutions like reducing the size of the General Assembly or cutting the governor's salary or not paying the General Assembly until they come up with a valid budget are all maybe nice ideas and may get some pleasure out of putting some of the pain on them, but it doesn't really do anything in terms of the actual budget numbers. As Dick said, you got to cut where the money is, and the money is in places that people tend to like, education and healthcare, things of that sort. And even like the kind of extreme case, what if you fired all state employees? Well, the fact is, the state employees don't make up very much of the budget. That obviously would save a few billion dollars, but it wouldn't solve the deficit problem, because most of what we do is give out money to different organizations, and these organizations, in a lot of people's minds, are doing things that are important. So it's going to involve some pain.
We're at the point where we're going to have to finish. I'm sorry, we have a couple of callers we can't take. I'm sure in the future we'll get back to some of these things. I guess as a way of ending up, though, I'm wondering, you know, we've talked about the criticism that so many people have made of the legislature and the governor kicking the can down the road. So now we're in an election year. And I wonder, do we think anything really substantial is going to happen between now and the election, between now and November?
Well, I don't follow – I don't have my pulse on the General Assembly's wrist, but people have told me that the answer is no, that they're going to have a temporizing budget, pass a budget that's only good for 6 months, not fully funded, and then come back and hope that magic takes place after the general election. But the problem is that past experience suggests there's never the right time for a tax increase. It's either before the filing period or before the general election or before the primary election or whatever. So it's going to really take a change in focus, and I don't think we want to count on magic occurring after the November election, but that's probably the time it's going to be addressed at least.
Mm.
I expect them to temporize. This year, we, you know, by ignoring the balanced budget requirement in the state, we've come up against a cash flow constraint. You know, the University of Illinois being owed, what is it, $500 million. Vendors across the state, social service providers across the state, not being paid. That's only going to get worse. So the blood in the streets will be there, even if we don't face the budget head on, because there just won't be enough revenue flowing in to pay for the services that people want.
Yeah.
Eventually, we're going to get people's attention, but I don't expect it to happen this year either.
Well, on that note, we're going to finish. I want to mention one more time, if you're interested in reading on this and some other subjects, look for the Illinois Report 2010, put out by the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Our two guests this morning, both contributors, and there are sections on both the Illinois and national economy in the book. You can get a hard copy from them. You can also read it online. Our guest this morning, Richard Dye, joining us from Chicago. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And here, Fred Gertz, an economist here at the U of I, here in the studio with me. Thank you.
Thank you.